Hi, I'm Anne McElhenney.
And I'm Phila McAleer.
And welcome to day 18 of the Harvey Weinstein Trial Unfiltered, a daily podcast using reenactments of the most dramatic moments of verbatim testimony from the trial of Harvey Weinstein. But first, let's just remind you of what this trial is all about. In a case that basically launched the Me Too movement, movie producer Harvey Weinstein faces two charges of rape and one of a criminal sex act concerning two separate women. He also faces charges of predatory sexual assault, which carry a possible life sentence. But yes. Today we're going to actually hear a lot more about those.
Yeah, the charges are not simple. The charges are complicated, even though that may sound simple. There's actually six women who've given evidence. There's only three women that are relevant, but two are particularly relevant, and one is an add-on. It is complicated, and as you'll hear, it's not just us who have been confused by it. It's the jury was as well. So today was very, very interesting. And
today, by all accounts, today is the last day, really, right?
Yes.
So the jury are going out today. Have gone out.
And normally, today was the judge's summing up, and he said it would take an hour. And honestly, I was worried that we wouldn't have enough for a podcast today. But wow, did it get hot and heavy early on and didn't really stop.
Yeah, very dramatic.
Yeah, very dramatic. So, you know, normally the judge's summing up is quite a dry day. But the court started off with anything but a dry event. In fact, with a demand from the prosecution that Harvey Weinstein be immediately placed in custody because of an op-ed written by Donna Rotunno, his lead defense counsel. Rotunno wrote a piece for Newsweek, which you can get by Googling it, and on the trial. And really, it seemed to be a plea to the jury to do the right thing and don't listen to the media. She denied this, but let's hear Joan Eluzzi Orban for the prosecution accuse her opposite number, Donna Rotunno, of jury tampering by publishing this article and calling for the jury, you know, to make the right decision. So let's hear Joan Eluzzi Orban tear into her opposite number.
And these are actors.
And the response from the defense. And yes, don't forget, these are actors playing these defense counsel, the prosecution counsel, using verbatim testimony. So let's hear that.
All right. So each side made it almost all the way through the weekend without sending me and the other side's letters. Do you each have copies to file with the court? People, do you have a copy for the court to file?
We will.
The defense, same question. Do you have a file for the court for the public file? Okay. So, why don't you get those stamped, and John, follow the usual procedure, and we will put whichever copies in the public file for each of those. Okay. All right. So, the people, you have written a letter. You want to tell me what the letter is about?
Yes, Judge. We were notified about, I don't know, I'm going to say 40 hours ago, that Ms. Rotunno had submitted an op-ed piece for Newsweek, which was picked up by other media outlets. And in that op-ed piece, she actually implored the jury to acquit her client, and she is, actually in the op-ed piece, she is speaking directly to the jury. It is completely, 100%, inappropriate behavior. It borders on tampering with the jury. It was an indirect violation of your direct orders. And in addition to that, it is certainly in violation of the ABA rules regarding trial conduct for a lawyer. If this is the conduct that is allowed to persist in this courthouse, Judge, then we are all lost because there is no way that the sanctity and the purity of a jury trial can ever exist and continue if every party is permitted to just go ahead and publicly say something that they would not be able to and not permitted to say in court. And in addition to that, what they have to say is so strictly monitored and rules in a courtroom are so completely different than what someone can just say ad hoc in the public. It absolutely has to be sanctioned. It absolutely has to be stopped. We have requested of the court several things. Number one, we are requesting, and most importantly, Judge, for this trial, we are requesting an instruction to the jury indicating that it has come to your attention that a member of the defense team inappropriately said something publicly in an effort to sway this jury. An out-of-court statement that would not be permitted to be something that would be said in court. We have written our proposed instructions. And number two, we are asking for the defendant to be remanded. Judge, there is no way that Ms. Rotano did this without the prompting and the encouragement, the knowledge, and the permission of this defendant. And as I said, this is akin to jury tampering. It just cannot be allowed. It can't be allowed in this courtroom or any courtroom in the country. It is blatantly against the rules of a judicial procedure. So we are asking that this be addressed by the court this morning.
Thank you, Judge. Briefly, the jury has been instructed on numerous occasions not to read any media, not to read any newspapers, to avoid all publications. Many times throughout the course of jury selection, I asked to strike the panel, objected to certain things, and I was reminded on numerous occasions that the jury has been instructed not to read any of the media. Ms. Rotano's statement mirrored to a large extent the closing argument. It is not jury tampering in any way, shape, or form. There have been a number of articles that have come out since closing argument that viewed Mr. Weinstein in a negative light. To say that this is jury tampering is a step too far. Moreover, to ask Mr. Weinstein to be remanded, I think, Your Honor, is very far afield. They are making illogical inferences that somehow he asked Ms. Rotano to do this. Moreover, there was nothing improper about doing this in the first instance. To ask Mr. Weinstein to be remanded based upon this is improper.
It doesn't strike you as against my order and instructions and request to
not specifically talk about witnesses.
You think addressing the jury in the first person isn't problematic?
I think the article was more about the jury system in total, Your Honor, as opposed to specific jurors in this case. And I think an instruction, Your Honor, would be extremely improper. That would highlight the issue more than anything and assume that the jurors were reading the paper, reading the newspapers, listening to the television, watching the television. I think that that would be a distraction to the jury. It would not be proper. If we are assuming that they are following the court's instructions not to read the news, not to watch television, we have all accepted that as something that they have sworn under oath not to do. So to raise this in a way that says that the defense is trying to improperly influence them would be more than objectionable. It would deny Mr. Weinstein a right to a fair trial. So we are asking that the court not do that.
Ms. Rotano, I would like to hear from you. What were you thinking?
Judge, this is an op-ed about the jury system as a whole, about the criminal justice system as a whole. Mr. Weinstein has a right to a fair and impartial jury, and writing an op-ed about the jury system as a whole does not in any way speak to this jury. The theme of the op-ed is no different than the themes in my closing argument. And we sit in this courtroom every day and we listen to the DA's office call my client a predator, call my client a rapist, when the evidence in this case does not show that to be true. And so, to write an op-ed to Newsweek about the state of our jury system, the state of our criminal justice system, does not in any way violate any orders. This was not a letter to the jury. This was an op-ed about my feelings on the system as a whole. And Judge, not only is it not improper, but it is also it's one small piece of a large media attack on Mr. Weinstein every single day. And for the DA's office to act as if they don't talk to the media just because their name is not on an article is ridiculous. I knew that this letter was coming to Your Honor before they sent it because someone in the media told me. So they put out all the information they want under this guise, an umbrella of anonymity. To write an op-ed about the state of our criminal judicial system does not in any way violate any orders. It did not say anything that my closing argument doesn't say, and it didn't say anything beyond the bounds of what our system of justice should be and how it should be run. So that's my response.
I'm not as sure I agree that the piece did not contain a plea to the jury. And that was a point that very quickly was picked up by Jonah Luzzi Urban and very quickly pounced upon. And let's hear her point out that what the words seem very self-explanatory. So let's hear that.
Judge, that's a ridiculous response, Judge, and I will tell you why. Because first of all, she addresses the jurors in the first person, number one. Number two, she can bemoan all she wants. The fact is that there are people who have called her client a predator because guess what? That's the actual name of the charge here. And rapist, that's the name of the charge as well. So, you know, she actually says in her article, Judge, that I implore the members of the jury to do what they know is right and was expected of them from the moment they were called to serve their duty in a court of law. Well, that's the whole point, the court of law. So, yes, during her summation, she has said, and I objected, and I understand she was given leeway, to do the right thing. To do the right thing. Well, you know, we would hope to God the right thing was to convict that man on the charges he is under indictment for. So to say that she was not addressing them directly is just simply not true, number one. Number two, if she's going to write an academic piece of her bemoaning of the state of the criminal justice system, this is not the time to do it.
All right. Defense team, you are ordered to refrain from communicating with the public and the press until there is a verdict in the case. And I will caution you about the tentacles of your public relations juggernaut.
So, yes, I think an op-ed that uses the words, I implore the members of this jury to do what they know is right and was expected of them from the moment they were called upon to serve their civic duty in a court of law. Any op-ed written by a defense lawyer that contains those words is basically a plea to the jury and is addressing the jury in a case.
I would just want to add just this one addendum to that, which is the point that Donna Rotunno made, which was that, you know, in an ideal world, of course, the idea is that the judge said to the jury, do not read anything, do not, you know, don't talk about this, don't listen to the radio, don't listen to podcasts, don't, radio, TV, whatever, don't be doing any of that. And I think the point that Donna Rotunno made was fair, which was, it's impossible, actually, for a human being living in this century and living in New York today, these weeks, and somebody in the jury to do that. And I think what she was trying to do, and I mean, it is obviously naughty, and she got an admonishment for it. But I think it's sort of fair because her point was that everything out there in the media has been so prejudicial, has been so. If the jury are hearing things, and I actually agree with her that it's impossible for them to not, because they weren't sequestered, they weren't in some kind of a sealed-off chamber, then all they heard in the media was negative, including these, you know, repeated conversations about images about how disgusting he looks, apparently, and all of this kind of thing.
The media has covered this trial in a very interesting way. You heard the exchange there, and the headline in the New York Times was a defense lawyer in the Weinstein case wrote an op-ed to the jury. And then, full stop, the judge was livid. Now, the judge was not livid.
No, he was. No way. And actually, we have actually seen him livid. Irate and livid. And today was not the day, but it was interesting. It jumped out at me because we were sitting in the court and it's like, no, actually, that's factually inaccurate.
I actually expected him to get a little bit livid. Right. However, to be fair to the defense, the judge at the beginning did not say you cannot talk to the media. He did not say you cannot do op-eds even. What he said was, lay off the witnesses. He didn't like Donna Rotunno calling witnesses liars and wannabe actors and insulting them. So, I would tend to agree with Rotunno that it's ludicrous to think that the jury is not reading some of the media. And this was her attempt at balance. I'm not sure it worked.
So then we had a second drama. Again, as we said, both of us went in today expecting to have this 1 hour, you know, that the judge would give his dry instructions and that would be it. But actually, no, the second drama was with the claim that Juror 11, and Juror 11, you might remember, came up before.
You could call her a recurring character.
She's a recurring character in this drama. Yes. So Juror 11 has been revealed to be reviewing books on predatory older men. This was the charge by the defense, including looking at a book called Kate Elizabeth Russell's controversial debut novel, My Dark Vanessa, in the middle of the trial. And,
the review appeared in the middle of the trial.
And they were very clear about the dates and all of that of when this had emerged. And My Dark of Vanessa, by the way, apparently is a book about a predatory older man having sex with a young girl. So again, Juror 11 is the same juror who had attracted the ire of the defence because she had not revealed, when she was being chosen for jury duty, she had not revealed that she herself is writing a book about predatory older men having sex with younger women. Exactly the issue she is being asked to impartially decide upon here in this trial. So she was called to answer questions for the defence. I mean, I don't think even in a movie I've ever seen this before. So she gets called. The jury aren't in the room at the time. She gets called in on her own, sits not where the jury is, sits to the side, doesn't sit actually where the witness stand is either.
So I thought she would have been sworn.
Yeah, funny. I actually thought that.
She wasn't under oath.
She wasn't under oath, but she was. But perhaps she's perhaps by being a juror, you're in some kind of a legal
You're always under oath.
Perhaps. So she was brought in to answer questions from the judge. Let's hear her being questioned and her denials.
This is juror number 11.
We wanted to supplement her.
Backtracking, last Friday Mr. Sharonis alerted the court that some of this was on the record, but probably not much because he wanted to put it on the record at the bench method so as not to exacerbate any issue. So, Mr. Sharonis.
Just putting on the record that we submitted to the court some documents that showed juror number 11 was reading a book called Lay Consentment, about a predatory older man, and reviewed another book about the same subject. We wanted to raise that to the court's attention.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you asking for juror number 11 to be discharged and replaced with alternate number 1 and to seat number 11?
Yes.
Yes.
The people.
We completely object to this. This person, in addition to her day job, also is, you know, reviewing books and writes about them. And that book that Mr. Sharonis refers to is about that some child abuse situation and is not related in any way to the charges at bar. We completely object. She is not grossly unqualified.
She doesn't have to be grossly unqualified until an hour from now.
When she is seated, she has to be grossly unqualified. She has to be grossly unqualified once she is seated and sworn.
Why is it simply not the better part of valor to excuse her now, given that if there is a conviction in this case, or an acquittal in this case, her presence on this jury is a distraction, and now even potentially more so.
Her presence on this jury was proper. It was proper from the moment it started, and it's proper now. She has done nothing to make herself grossly unqualified to review a book, and to read a book suddenly that is completely unrelated to the charges here is not gross unqualification. It's just not.
Mr. Sharonis.
Nothing else to say.
Okay, but your request is to her and replace her with alternate number 1 and number 11.
Yes.
Okay.
She's not grossly unqualified.
All right. Well, let's hear from Mr. Sharonis first. Mr. Sharonis, it is my understanding you are asking for juror number 11 to be discharged and replaced with alternate number 1 to be sat into seat number 11. And is that the case? And if so, why?
It is, Your Honor. We tendered to the court some initial information that appears juror number 11 has been reviewing books regarding predatory older men and lack of consent and things like that while seated as a juror. We believe that is in violation of the court's order to do further investigation on a case or similar case. We think it raises issues as to the propriety of her sitting as a juror.
The people strenuously object.
And we spoke to our client about that issue.
She's now a seated juror. She's been sworn in. She needs to be grossly unqualified to not continue, and she has done nothing wrong. We never instructed this jury. They are not to be reading books and not to be allowed to read books on any sex abuse whatsoever while seated as a juror. That is her misdeed here. That is her crime. And by the way, the book that was raised by defense is about child abuse, completely and wholly different from the subject matter of this case. She's not grossly unqualified. The people strenuously object, and this is an end run for defense around the fact they ran out of challenges and do not like this woman.
That has nothing to do with not liking this woman. That is not accurate at all.
We are asking the judge to do an inquiry and not make a decision until that inquiry is done.
All right, let's bring in juror number 11 and have her sit there. And Mr. Weinstein, you have in fact discussed this with your attorneys, and you wish for juror 11 to be discharged and replaced with alternate 1 into seat 11?
Yes, I do.
Hi, juror number 11. How are you?
Good, thanks.
I understand during the course of the trial, you reviewed some books online about various topics such as child abuse, predatory...
I have not.
Well, my information, as faulty as it might be, there was a review published in the last... within the last week or so.
I don't know what you mean.
That is news to you?
A review?
Yes, a review of a French book, I think.
Yes. Yes, that is true. I am reading that book. It is on Goodreads. I'm in the middle of reading it.
You already issued some sort of online review of it?
I don't think I have reviewed it yet. It says I'm currently reading it. You know how Goodreads works. You put up the book you're reading and books you are currently reading.
All right. Thank you. Anything further?
Juror 11 also has not reviewed the book, not rendered an opinion about the book. She read a book on child abuse. This is what defense is saying, alleging makes her grossly unqualified. That is ridiculous. She's not unqualified, never mind grossly unqualified. People strenuously object.
All right. She apparently is simply reading the book. So the motion is denied. She will stay. Everybody ready for the final instructions?
That's a pretty strong denial. You know, no, I didn't do it. And there it rested. And then I think Damon Sharonis went back and started to read what was really there. And the judge gave his summing up, which we'll come to later in this podcast. And then Damon Sharonis came back to the topic with new, stronger allegations about juror number 11. Let's hear him and the reaction from Judge James Burke.
I would like to state on the other objections from earlier this morning and how it occurred. This morning, when we were discussing certain issues at the bench, the court actually brought it up. I didn't even raise it. The court mentioned it was going to dismiss juror number 11. I believe it used the term dumping juror number 11. The state objected to that, and there was communication back and forth at the bench conference about whether keeping her would affect the conviction in this case. Juror 11 posted a review on January 29th of 2020 about a book she read in August. I'll quote it. I liked it a lot about this novel, which I read in August. The claustrophobia of Vanessa's isolation, the repulsiveness of her predator, and entrapment in the relationship. I did question how totally alone she remains at boarding school. There is hardly a conversation with another student. This continues later in her life. I understand the story focuses on the girl and man, but I did not find Vanessa's complete lack of interaction with anyone else believable. Russell addresses a very different subject with insight. I wish there were more characters in the story to frame the horror of the central relationship. She's referring to a book called My Dark Vanessa, which captures the complexity and necessity of the Me Too movement in her powerful debut, talking about a woman embarking on a sexual relationship with an older man. This review was posted in the middle of this trial. And the other book that time was Le Consentimento. She had been reading at the about a French writer, and it has to do with sexual relationships with girls and boys under the age of 16 and explores the ambiguities of an era when many in France still associate with pedophiles. Then, as the court was going to bring out Juror 11, I asked if you can do it in the back, and the court responded, not if I'm going to dismiss her. What happens then is Juror 11 is brought out, asked in public about whether she read or reviewed a book, and put on the spot, which was unfortunate for her. But at the end of the day, in the middle of this trial, a review was posted about a book that has to do with a volatile relationship with predatory older men. We got that information to the court on Friday. The court obviously reviewed it, and your initial inclination based on the bench conference was to dismiss or, quote, dump that juror. Now we are in a situation, we are requesting this court follow its initial inclination and dismiss Juror 11 and seat the first alternate. We think it has nothing to do, as Ms. Aluzzi's claims, of not liking Juror number 11. It has nothing to do with it. It is not personal. It is based on the fact this information we believe is relevant to her fitness to sit on the jury. And as we believe we made a proper record as to why this juror should be removed. I think we did that on Friday. The court initially agreed with us, and bringing this juror out here to speak in public was not appropriate. We would have rather done it in the back, which I requested. This only fans the flames of this, and we request Juror 11 be dismissed.
Judge, Actually, Mr. Sharonis is confusing apples and oranges. What she was asked about very specifically was this book, this French book regarding predatory men. And what she indicated, which is absolutely correct, she was read it and she posted the fact she was reading it, and that was it. The other review he's talking about was something that it was absolutely not indicated about why or when it was reviewed by this witness, by this juror. She did not in any way, was not disingenuous in her responses to the court. She is not in any way unqualified, never mind grossly.
It was posted January 29th, 2 weeks ago. It is not mixing apples and oranges. At the end of the day, this is a situation during the middle of the trial, a review was posted about a relationship and the repulsiveness of her predator and entrapment in that relationship. It is clear, at least on that, juror number 11 should not sit on this jury. We gave the court the additional information the court could review and initially gave the court pause in saying he was going to dismiss juror number 11. It is not mixing anything. Not liking anybody. It is based on what this juror has done during the course of the trial and prior to trial, which we made a firm record about.
I accept juror 11's surprise at my questions, and everybody else has made the record. There is nothing wrong with anybody. Any other issues?
Yes.
We are asking for a mistrial based on that.
Almost goes without saying.
I said it anyway.
Denied.
So now we come to the judge's summing up, but before that, I just want to talk to our listeners out there. We're getting enormous responses. The audience is growing every day, and we're some of the most popular podcasts all over the world. And I'd like you to please keep reading the podcast. Please also leave comments. We do read the comments, and people are
even
still...
Even the ones we don't like.
Even the ones we don't like. People are still saying, I wish they would stop interrupting each other. I think we need, for sake of context, tell people we are married, and therefore interrupting is just part of the game.
I think we've improved as well.
I think we've improved.
A lot of people were very upset about the fact that we were so bad at pronouncing people's names, and I do apologise for that, but we're both from Ireland, and I can tell you there weren't many foreign names around. Yes. Where we were brought up in the countryside.
So we do listen to you. We have tried to stop interrupting each other. We have we do now make a big effort to pronounce all the names correctly. So thank you to all our American audience and all our British audience. Please keep leaving all our international audience.
And Australians and Canadians, thank you very much.
Please keep leaving us comments and rate us. And I don't care if it's a one star. Well, I do care if it's a one star. Try and rate us and give us
your 5 stars.
Give us your 5 stars, please, folks. So let's go to the judges summing up. And as I said, we have an international audience. So I want to explain to our British and indeed our Commonwealth listeners about how a judge's summing up differs in the US from where perhaps you live. In this trial, the judge is merely focused on explaining the law and definition of phrases in the law and what the charges are, and the definition and explanation of the phrases used in the charges. In Britain and Australia and other places, the judge will summarise the evidence that has... In fact, the judge's summing up can sometimes last days. He will sum up all the relevant evidence and ask, do you believe this person? Do you believe that person? This person says that. This did not happen today. It was brief-ish.
Yes. Yes.
So let's hear some of the summing up by Judge James Burke.
And we've decided to focus on the part about the claims made by Annabella Sciorra. This is very complicated, and we may not have fully explained this in previous podcasts, only because it has been very unclear in the court. Weinstein is charged with sexually assaulting Jessica Mann and Miriam Haley. However, they've added the allegations made by Annabella Sciorra to the Mann and Haley allegations. If the jury believe Mann or Haley, then he will be guilty of rape or assault. But if they believe either of the women and Sciorra, then he could be found guilty of predatory sexual assault and faces a life sentence. And even saying that, and for any of you listening and thinking, oh my God, that's super complicated, wait till you hear.
Yes.
The other allegations of rape and sexual assault that the jury heard during the trial were from Lauren Young, Tarala Wolfe, and Dawn Dunning. And they're only there to bolster the case of the main accusers. Those three are called Molyneux witnesses.
Bad character witnesses.
Bad character, you know, to bolster up the prior bad acts accusation. The jury is not being asked to pronounce guilt or innocence in those three cases. So let's hear the judge try to sum up the case for the jury. We'll hear two separate parts of the judge's summing up, his attempt to give them some general guidance and then his attempt to give them guidance on the Annabella Sciorra allegations. Let's hear it.
What does our law mean when it requires proof of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt? The law uses the phrase beyond a reasonable doubt to tell you how convincing the evidence of guilt must be to permit a verdict of guilty. The law recognizes, in dealing with everyday events, there are very few things in this world that we know with absolute certainty. Therefore, the law does not require the people to prove the defendant's guilt beyond all possible doubt. On the other hand, it is not sufficient to prove that a defendant is probably guilty. In a criminal case, the proof of guilt must be stronger than that. It must be beyond a reasonable doubt. And a reasonable doubt is an honest doubt of the defendant's guilt for which a reason exists, which is based upon the nature and quality of the evidence. It is an actual doubt, not an imaginary doubt. It is a doubt that a reasonable person acting in a matter of this importance would be likely to entertain because of the evidence that was presented or because of the lack of convincing evidence. Proof of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt is proof that leaves you so firmly convinced of the defendant's guilt that you have no reasonable doubt of the existence of any element of the crime or of the defendant's identity as the person who committed the crime. In determining whether or not the people have proven the defendant's guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, you should be guided solely by a full and fair evaluation of the evidence. After carefully evaluating all of the evidence, each of you must decide beyond a reasonable doubt of the defendant's guilt. Whatever your verdict may be, it must not rest upon baseless speculation, nor may it be influenced by bias, prejudice, sympathy, or by a desire to end your deliberations or to avoid an unpleasant duty. The third count is predatory sexual assault. This count pertains to Jessica Mann and Annabella Sciorra. Under count three, a person is guilty of predatory sexual assault when he commits the crime of rape in the first degree and when he's engaged in conduct constituting the crimes of either rape in the first degree or criminal sexual act in additional persons. I have given you the definition of rape in the first degree and criminal sexual act in the first degree and their terms, and they have the same meaning here. In order for you to find the defendant guilty of this crime, the people are required to prove from all the evidence in the case beyond a reasonable doubt both of the following elements. 1. That on or about March 18, 2013, in the county of New York, the defendant, Harvey Weinstein, committed rape in the first degree in that he engaged in sexual intercourse with Jessica Mann, and that the defendant did so without Jessica Mann's consent by the use of forcible compulsion. And 2. That on or about the winter season spanning 1993 to 1994 in the county of New York, the defendant, Harvey Weinstein, committed either rape in the first degree or criminal sexual act in the first degree, in that he engaged in sexual intercourse with Annabella Sciorra, and that the defendant did so without Annabella Sciorra's consent by the use of forcible compulsion, or in that he engaged in oral sexual conduct with Annabella Sciorra, and that the defendant did so without Annabella Sciorra's consent by the use of forcible compulsion. If you find that the people have proven beyond a reasonable doubt both of those elements, you must find the defendant guilty of this crime. On the other hand, if you find that the people have not proven beyond a reasonable doubt either one or both of those elements, you must find the defendant not guilty of this crime. If you find the defendant not guilty of count three, predatory sexual assault, for the reason that the people have failed to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant committed the crime of rape in the first degree against Jessica Mann, then you must find the defendant not guilty of count 4 and proceed to consider count 5.
Well, the judge tried, but to be honest, I don't think he succeeded, and the jury didn't think he succeeded, and they were full of questions. But I don't really blame the jury for not really understanding why they're not being asked to pronounce guilt or innocence on the Annabella Sciorra allegations. Even though if they believe her, no, especially if they believe her, but not Jessica Mann.
Or Miriam Haley.
Then Weinstein goes free. But if they believe her, Annabella Sciorra, in conjunction with either of Mann.
Or Miriam Haley,
then his sentence is bumped up to a life sentence.
If everyone out there is finding that complicated, guess what? The jury found it complicated too. So the jury retired, but a note came out of the jury room less than 45 minutes after they had retired. So at 12:12 p.m., a note came out, and this is what the note said. So we, the jury, request written legal definition of the charges being considered, including forcible compulsion, consent, rape in the first degree and third degree, and criminal sexual act. We would also like an explanation of the law of why we may find the defendant guilty for predatory sexual assault only and not other crimes. We would like the court to confirm whether we could find the defendant guilty of both counts 4 and 5, or whether we can just find him guilty of 3 or 4 or 5. We would like the court to confirm that we can only find the defendant guilty of count 1, only if the state has proven him guilty of both Miriam Haley and Annabella Sciorra, and that we can only find him guilty of count 3. The note reads...
So count 3 is the predatory assault one,
exactly.
Right?
So here's how the judge answered the request. Let's listen to it.
I'm not permitted to give you the charges in writing, but if you send me a written note asking for me to reread or re-instruct you on those charges or any other charges, I'll be happy to do so, one or more or multiple times, to your satisfaction. Paragraph 2. We would also like to request an explanation on the law as to why we may find the defendant guilty of predatory sexual assault against Annabella Sciorra and not other crimes. And for that part, I will tell you that, instruct you that, you must consider only the charges of predatory sexual assault that are before you. And you must not speculate as to any other charges that are not before you. And I will be happy to reread any instructions upon your written request. If you are asking why isn't there a standalone charge of rape in the first degree or criminal sexual act in the first degree to consider regarding Annabella Sciorra the way there is for Miriam Haley or Jessica Mann, my instruction to you is that there is not any such charge for you to consider. And you must consider, as I just stated, only the charges that are before you. Further, or why the statute of limitations has or has not run out for certain crimes. My instruction is any matters regarding the statute of limitations are for the judge to decide as a matter of law, and you are not to speculate on that matter. The next paragraph is, we would like the court to confirm whether we could find the defendant guilty of both count 4 and 5, or whether we can only find him guilty of 3 or 4 or 5. The latter part of that is the accurate one. You can only find him guilty of count 3 or 4 or 5. And then paragraph 4 is, we would like the court to confirm that we can only find the defendant, subdivision 1, guilty of count 1 only if the prosecution has proven the crimes charged against the defendant for both Miriam Haley and Annabella Sciorra. The answer to that is yes. And subdivision 2, guilty of count 3 only if the prosecution has proven the crimes charged against the defendant for both Jessica Mann and Annabella Sciorra. And the answer to that also is yes. So I'm confirming that is the case for both counts 1 and 3.
The The judge says you must only consider the charges that are before you and not why some charges aren't before you and some are. In some ways, the jury's kind of getting to the fundamental difficulty with this case. Under the statute of limitations, Annabella Sciorra, really her case should not be in front of this jury. And now they've got it in under some predatory assault linkage with the Miriam Healy
and Jessica Mann.
It was 27 or 28 years ago. It shouldn't be there under statute of limitations.
And they're not the only ones. I mean, we came out of court today and we've, you know, like you have all these journalists, you know, some of them more seasoned than others. But I mean,
most of them, you know, want to convict Weinstein last week, right?
Absolutely. I mean, a couple of them were talking to me and basically saying, I don't understand this. I don't understand how Annabella Sciorra is so significant in this given the statute of limitation. And they were even, I mean, at one point trying to ask some of the defense lawyers who aren't now allowed to speak to anyone.
Some of the press were saying, like, so there's other people, you know, whose cases are much more recent, and they weren't allowed in under the statute of limitations. But Annabella Sciorra, who can't even remember whether it was 27 or 28 years ago, is a significant part of this case. So it's...
Yeah, so the jury
is confused. Yeah. They're right to be confused.
It's actually, yeah, they're not alone in having that confusion, you know. And so then the afternoon proceeded and not, you know, a few hours after that,
yes.
Quite recently, in the afternoon, they came back with another request.
They requested exhibits, a blueprint of Harvey Weinstein's former Soho apartment. I assume that's because of one of the sexual assaults took place there.
And then a copy of all the emails with certain women's names highlighted in red.
That's a reference to Annabella Sciorra, because Weinstein hired Black Cube, the Israeli private investigation company, to investigate the women who were going to be cooperating with the New York Times and the Ronan Farrow book. He highlighted Annabella Sciorra and Rose McGowan as two women who could cause him trouble, I suppose. Now, he didn't say, these are women that I have raped in the past. It could cause him trouble for his sexual behavior. So, again, I always thought that the Black Cube was a little bit of a red herring. Black Cube, red herring. Because it's your right to investigate people who are making allegations about you. But obviously the jury find it significant. One thing I would like to say is this case is winding down. We have a podcast every week called the Anne and Phelim Scoop, where we will talk about this in more detail and be able to look back and in a more relaxed way. Every day we're just bringing you the latest of the latest. So it's the Anne and Phelim Scoop, and that's Anne, A-N-N, and Phelim, P-H-E-L-I-M, Scoop. So please go there to hear more about this. It's a weekly podcast, and we go into great detail on this and on many other matters going on. So please see us there.
So I get the impression that this jury are getting down to work very swiftly and having already had two requests of the judge, and the judge has made it clear today that anytime they need anything, they just have to write a note to him. It might take a while.
Yes, everyone is wondering just how long this jury is going to take. Even the journalists, it's quite a topic of conversation. I had an email from someone today, actually a French journalist. His editors wanted to know how long the jury... Would I have any intelligence on how long the jury...
How long is the jury going to be out?
Yes, exactly. Yes. And I said, je ne sais pas.
The journalists from all over the world,
yes.
It's actually, the interest is extraordinary.
Yes.
And today was packed today. We had to go really early because there were so many foreign journalists
there.
So many journalists in general. We almost didn't get in. But that brings us back to the point that, nobody knows.
Yes, we have spoken to a very senior law person here, an ADA, not connected to this case, who has tried many cases, high-profile cases.
And who basically said to us that in a high-profile case, the jury can be out for a very long time. He was certainly not saying, don't be packing any bags,
yes,
and don't be giving up the Airbnb.
For example, we said, oh, well, we have an Airbnb until Friday. Should we tell the guy we're leaving? He goes, I would book your Airbnb for another week, he said, you know.
We're not going anywhere.
This person thinks, and who this experienced ADA in Manhattan says, this jury will not make a decision by Friday. Although the way they're asking for exhibits and that, and by the way, my feeling from, you know, I initially thought it would be difficult for them to find him guilty and that it would either be an acquittal or a mistrial. From the way they're asking for the exhibits, from the way they're asking for various questions, looks like they're leaning towards guilty. What would you say, Anne?
I think it's way too early to ask that question. I think they're only assembling themselves. They're just, because they've got so much material to go through. I think it's too early to say that. But basically, we'll be there every day. We'll be turning up every day. And as soon as we get a verdict, we will be bringing it to you. You know, we'll probably actually, you know, do it live from the court.
Yes.
Would be our idea. So you'll get if you've subscribed, it'll drop into your Dropbox. Yes. and you'll hear that there's an emergency podcast that's just been dropped. It'll
subscribe.
Probably be a short one, but yeah, please do. And so, you know, thank you so much. We've come to the end of today, and if you can, please donate at unreportedstorysociety.com.
That helps us make this podcast and helps us bring read the comments. People really like the podcast. If you can help, unreportedstorysociety.com, give what you can.
Thank you so much.
We will talk to you soon.
Hopefully. Very soon.
Today's podcast is produced by Unreported Story Society and Magdalena Segueda and Raquel Lerman of Theater Planners. Written and presented by Fela McAleer and Anne McElhaney. Directed by Kif Scholl. Donna Rotono is played by Caitlin Carlton. Judge James Burke is played by Thomas Fasella. Joan Elusi Orban is played by Michelle Gardner. Harvey Weinstein is played by Kif Scholl. Juror number 11 is played by Rebecca Larson, and Damon Sharonis is played by David Stanbra. Edited by Mark Aramian, engineered by Chris Gardner.